Good morning.
This is a special meeting of the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Services District on October 23rd, 2018. It is 9 a.m. We'll call the meeting to order with pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we'll call for Robert Swan is present, John Armstrong.
Here.
Spencer Edwards.
I'm here.
Janice Kwiatkowski.
Here.
And Nansen Wara. So all five directors are present.
I forgot my...
We can move to approve the order of the agenda.
Okay.
We don't need to have a second.
Oh, I second that we approve the order of the agenda.
All right, move a second to approve the order of the agenda. Is there any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so we have approved the order of the agenda, which consists of one item, the conduct a board orientation on and a carpool tour of select district facilities. And I will not read the entire agenda because it tells us where we're all going. But I will now turn things over to our master of ceremonies.
I don't know that you want to go that far. Okay, to try to keep us on track, I'm going to look to be done within the half an hour. And what I'm looking to provide those in attendance and the board members is a little bit of a high-level overview of why we're here, see some of the things that we're not going to see, because it would take days for us to go around and see all the facilities. We can certainly schedule additional outdoor activities and see more, but there's only so much that we can really get done in a day. And to provide a little background that ties the district's mission and the vision of this board to what we're going to see and how we get it from what we see to where we want it to be, if any changes are necessary and everything else. So I put together this overview. It lives on the website now as of last night, been modified as of 4:20 this morning, but it's up and available. It's got some links in it that link you to different areas, different to the government code and some other things. So I think these will be helpful as just a historical resource. So without any further ado, I wasn't intending to get into detail on any of this. I just want to give you kind of a blasted overview so that when you go out and see things, you're going to be able to make a relationship to what they are, because there's no way we can explain everything when we're on site. Logistically, these gentlemen here are a tour guide. We're going to go out to the field. We'll go through the facilities, and that'll be pretty much the end of it. You'll probably have a whole lot of questions that we can address it at future venues or some type of a public event, if you feel that's appropriate, when we close out the day. But you will see this facility, and that is at Second Grody. I do want to read the mission because it goes throughout this whole discussion. Their mission is to provide environmentally sound, economic, and compliant services that meet our customers' needs for water, wastewater treatment, fire protection, park facilities, and the unincorporated township of Groveland. And that is really why we're here. That's what everything is grounded in that statement. There are board member roles and there are management roles in getting us there. And this is a very profound statement, I believe, that great policies are professional expressions of great boards. Policies tell me what to do and how to do it. And that's my role. I live by your statements through policies. And that's the primary roles of a board member, to make and improve district policy, set the direction and the vision. That's what we're doing now. We're going to get background to be able to set that direction and vision in the future, because you're going to have to set priorities for some really expensive things in the future, really expensive activities, construction projects, and that type of stuff that You'll need to know what they mean and why. And then measure performance. That's a really simple statement there, but that's where you look at, did we accomplish our capital improvement plan? Did we accomplish the objectives that we set forth for the manager? And so the policymaking is a board responsibility. That's where there's a link to the government code specific to a single statement that was revised in the law in 2006, that a legislative body known as the Board of Directors shall govern each district. The board shall establish policies for the operation of the district. The Board of Directors shall provide for the implementation of the policies, which is the responsibility of the general manager, and it's a responsibility that I take extremely seriously. Policy examples that are important and will be in our minds today, obviously Board of Directors will finish those up hopefully on Friday. That'll be an exercise that we'll finish up. And operations, financial budgeting, contracting, purchasing, facility improvements. For example, when we have a developer come in, we want to make sure that we have standards that, that they follow. We also have really important water rules and regulations and ordinances that govern exactly how this office operates, how we implement the billing policy, how we charge for things, how we deal with issues in the field and customer service and all that. The most important things for today's discussion will be discussion about or thoughts about master plans, which are the big picture from water supply and staffing and services for the entire community and future growth, to capital improvement plans, which are specific plan for what's going to get done year by year, 5 years, 10 years, what we're saving for, what needs to be replaced, and then construction standards, and those are adopted by the board and allow us to be able to review plans and specifications when the market comes in and says, hey, we're going to do this. We've got a policy, we've got a standard, we know exactly what we've got to do, and we can explain to them exactly what they're going to pay. And that's, those things are really important. And how they're going to build it and all that. And also, we'll be dealing with personnel, organizational structure, and staffing plans. Again, not today, but you'll be able to see the relationship between what's done in the field and what we'll be dealing with in the future. So the setting direction part of it, this is a graphic that I actually put together quite a while ago. And it's, I'm gonna try zooming in a little bit, if I can. Just because it's important to understand that this is where the board gets its direction, gets its feelings, gets its interest from the public, and then conveys that in terms of policies and actions. So, having a system of being able to get public input, when we're talking about $10 million worth of capital projects, we've got to have people on board. You know, if we're taking on a $1 million loan, people got to know why, where's it going? And involving community leaders and also specific expertise in the community to make sure we've got good decisions. Again, reaffirming our mission, establishing the vision. We've got a couple of vision statements that I'll review toward the end of this and that have already been put out there by the board. Developing specific measurable goals and objectives. And we've done that in the management objectives. We've done that in some other actions of the board. And then those translate into policies. So if we don't have a policy on it, that I can implement it and update some policies, and then we tie it to performance. If I don't perform in the end, because you'll see through this discussion and through today and through Friday, you got to give me the leeway to manage the district. And if I don't manage it right, and you'll be able to tell, you'll be able to measure it against the performance objectives and where the board wants to go. If we're not there, change your leader. That's what you do. So the reason I say that is just because we've got a lot of activities that we're going to be working on. So the general manager responsibility, just to summarize, specifically delegated under law is the implementation of policies, the appointment, supervision, discipline, dismissal of district employees, and the dots there are subject to the union MOU and other rules and regulations. Supervision of district finances and services, and supervision of facilities. Sorry, interchange those, but that you get the hint. Those are all the things that I'm responsible for on a daily basis, and you'll see that there are a million decisions we make constantly from the time we get up in the morning. Then this is just to present the organizational chart. We've seen it. Nothing's changed here. We've got the main area of interest is not that the office is not of interest, but for discussion today, under the operations manager, the employees that we have, and again, we have 6, 7, 8 on the operations side, on the collections and distribution, and then we've got another 4 on the treatment side. But you'll hear that they're dual certified and those types of things, so there's crossover there, but everybody is under the operations manager. Then the goal of today is to give you some information now up front, and then to get to know more about the facilities we go out on in the field. Ronnie, thank you very much for that wonderful,
yummy
picture. You know, that's something that we'll get to
colors in there.
Take a look at today. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm glad there's no odor associated with the
donut.
One of the goals for today would be for us to understand how the decisions that you make affect the future of our infrastructure, and how that supports back to the mission, how those decisions all come back to support it. If they're disconnected, then we got to change one or the other and accomplish the board's vision. Again, there's a couple of vision statements that you've made. This is just an aerial photograph of a pretty large project we've got coming up, close to $500,000 project that was FEMA and state funded. It's taken hundreds and hundreds of hours of staff time. So it is basically, I can actually zoom in, that beautiful line, right? It comes up from the down from the trees here. It comes down this way and goes down. And that's basically a gunite concrete ditch, V-ditch. And if we have time, we'll see a piece of it today as we go around the reservoir. But you won't be able to see it from top to bottom. There's just not enough time. And from top to bottom, it needs to be renovated. It was pretty much put in without any design to serve a purpose of getting water away from that reservoir. Because if you don't, and you can see all along the hillside here, this is basically a canal. You know, that moves the water coming down off that hill away from this pond. Because if it all went in, we'd have a lot more problems with overflows. The other thing that we want to accomplish is also to understand that high quality experienced and qualified personnel resources are necessary to uphold the district's mission. That's the key, infrastructure and the district's personnel. Without them, and without them being qualified and certified, what you see today would be impossible to accomplish. We also are responsible for the health and safety of the community. It's a big statement. I usually don't make it that way. I feel like, there's a liability associated with that, you know. But we are. There's everything that we do. And, you know, when we look at the mission, environmentally sound, economic and compliant services are at our core, and that's really what we want to do. We have state water board permits, regional water quality control board permits required for all of our operations. That's our guidebook. Everything has to follow it to the letter. Compliance is mandatory, and violations results in fines. Expedited improvements, in other words, we might have a $10 million capital improvement program that it's extended out over 30 years so that it's reasonable for customers. And we have multiple failures of something, and the state will come in and say, here's your $2 million fine, and you can invest that $2 million into that infrastructure right now. In other words, come up with a way to do it within the next 2 years instead of 10. And they do it all the time. And there are no excuses. It doesn't matter if the contractor comes up and in the middle of the night goes and digs a sewer line up and it leaks into the lake. Our fault. We lose. We can claim we didn't have, we didn't have any control over it, but it might reduce the fine, but it's still a mandatory fine. Permit violations jeopardize public health and safety. Anytime we have sanitary sewer overflows, it's a permit violation. Anytime we have water quality outside of the standards, it's a permit violation. And not that we do have water quality outside the parameters. Thank you very much, Greg. But it's a serious matter. Employees must achieve and maintain state certification at specified levels. Okay? So the permit says it on the front page. Here's the level of certification your employees have to be in responsible charge and a shift operator. Okay? And that's what we have to maintain. There's no excuse. We can't find them. They're sick. Their mom's sick. There's no excuses for that. We absolutely have to have that. And then simple operating errors or inattention can cause process upsets. You'll see in the wastewater plant, if somebody forgets something doesn't get turned on for a day, the process change doesn't happen for a day, you might come back and it'll take Greg 2 weeks to get it fixed and it'll stink and we'll be out of compliance and, just somebody not thinking for the day. Well-meaning person, but, so it's really a lot. Treatment plant upsets, water quality problems, sanitary sewer overflow, service interruptions, property damage, all weigh on operators. I'm not saying poor operators, it's their job. But these are the things that they think about every day. And when you go on a call, you take it home with you. Because you're at your kid's baseball game and you get a page and off you go. So our services are also very complex. We have 35 miles of gravity sewer, 7 miles of pressurized force main, 16 sewer lift stations, a wastewater treatment plant, a recycled water reservoir, and spray fields. Very complicated system. The reason that I thought this was important to take a look at is it shows the location of these little things that look like sort of a pistol or something.
Pump.
That's our pump. Those are our lift stations. Those are all the lift stations. So wherever you see those, all around the lake, and when you see them going from this one, flowing to this pump, pumping again, pumping around the top, pumping over here, back side of the dam, gravity feeding, pumping again. So that's what happens. That drop of sewage that goes in on that far side of the lake is pumped and pumped and pumped and pumped. And every one of those pumps has to work. So it's more than just a single location. And really, we're only going to be able to see one location. So I'm going to give you an idea. They're spread out from Big Oak Flat to the far side of the lake. On the water side, 70 miles of 6 to 16-inch diameter water mains, 16 pressure-regulating valves, 5 distribution reservoirs, plus 2 clear wells, plus tanks at the alternate water system, pressure-boosting pumps, hydropneumatic pumps, 2 water treatment plants, 2 mobile membrane systems, and we will see some of that today. And this is significant just because it shows the various pressure zones. Each of the different colors is a different pressure zone that's regulated either by a tank or by a pressure regulating valve. And so you can see where it says, for example, PRB, Pine Mountain Lake 04. That pressure, I don't know what it drops down from. One side might be 110 pounds and the other side might be 40 pounds on the regulator. So we do that because otherwise it would be 220 pounds at the bottom of the hill, and that would blow people's normal plumbing up. So we've got to, if we didn't have it that high, if we didn't have it at 40 pounds, we might not have any pressure down the way. So it's a real balance, and that's something that we have to control. So Also, the other thing that that shows is that we've got water tanks. The red tanks, this was a plan for improvements in the future, so don't pay attention to those. But the blue tanks are existing tanks from tank four, tank two. Oh, whoops, you can't see where my finger is. Tank two, tank three, tank one, and then tank five over toward Big Old Club. Anyway, they're spread out all over the place, and that's so that there's hydraulic pressure. This is just to give you an idea, because we have I'm going to go back to that control valve. This is the type of valve that controls the pressure that drops it from 120 down to 40. They've got a pressure regulator like you have at your house. They have a screen. And these things are required to be, they should be checked every quarter. They should be maintained at least once a year. And when they fail, they just open up or they close. And they don't regulate pressure. Pretty soon, people's hot water heaters are blowing up. And so those are really important. We also have, I realize this looks technical, but I want you to know that for every fire hydrant, you've got a valve. You got a valve box. You got a valve down in the ground, 3 feet down. 3 to 4 feet down, typically, fire hydrant should be maintained every year, flushed, flow tested, all that kind of stuff. Valve box cleaned out, make sure it works, make sure the valve works, all that. Those are the kind of things that right now we're not adequately staffed and trained, and those go together because we've got new people and we're dealing with crisis every day. And we'll get to this. We know we need to get it. Same with each street valve. There are over, back to that other graphic, there are 1,072 of those isolation valves in the system. 1,072, they should be operated once a year, yeah. Top to bottom.
Exercise
to make sure that they work so you can shut off areas. And anyway, so.
The CAL FIRE doesn't do any inspections of the fire hydrants, do they?
No.
I mean, you know, sometimes it depends on the district. I've worked for districts where you took care of them, and then ones where you didn't.
Yeah, it's kind of depends on how it goes. We could probably contract with them.
Yeah.
You know, to do at least the flow testing. The dilemma would be we have our people on standby anyway because they'd just be pulling stuff up.
Right.
You know.
It is pretty fragile.
It's not a matter of you open a hydrant, you close a hydrant, you go to the next one. You know, you open that hydrant, you got a freight drain coming at you.
Yeah, you got
it. And it might be going through two PRVs to get there. When you shut it down, it's got to back up, close that PRV, close that PRV, or it just starts hammering and blows it up.
I think every house fire we've ever had or wildland fire we've had a broken hydrant.
Oh, yeah. You can actually...
I don't know if it's the adrenaline of the firefighters opening it or whatnot, but every time we've had to go out and repair it.
That happens, you know, the adrenaline. And the other thing that you can do is if you don't watch your compound pressure, you can suck the whole system up out of the ground. You know, I mean, the whole system will just lift up out of the ground.
There are also air relief valves and air vacuum valves, so... When you do get a vacuum on the system, in other words, you're running the water so fast over here that it's sucking the water over here. You know, it puts a negative pressure on the main. And the backing valve is supposed to open and let air in. Otherwise, it will collapse the pipe. And the same on the other one. When you charge the system back up, there's air valves that are all over the place that expel the air. We're not going to see any of that stuff. It's just everywhere. We have hundreds and hundreds of them. Many of them haven't been looked at in decades because it just takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, and we will. But that's what capital improvement plans are for. Set a plan, and we'll just, how are we doing? So some of the other challenges real quick are, again, multiple spread out facilities, varying topography. Every foot of elevation distance that water or sewer has puts a half a pressure more on that line or less, depending on whether it's going up or down. So 100 feet down, we got 50 more pounds of pressure. That's pretty significant, and which means we got to pump it a lot. We've got a lot of mechanical stuff that they don't have in the valley. highly fluctuating population load, you think, no big deal, people are gone, you don't have anything to do. Wrong. It's the other way around. Then things settle out in Maine, they sink, the things don't work right, the grease settles out, the treatment process is more difficult, and then the next weekend it's up to the maximum. So it's really a lot of extra work that doesn't happen in the city of Sunnyvale, you know. Difficult to access facilities, and we will, I'm just going to jump through these real quick. You can't really tell by that picture, but standing there, you are probably 5 foot over the roof of that house that's 50 feet away. That's how steep it is. Okay? And we have a lift station at the bottom of that hill with two pumps in it, a generator, electrical panels, everything else. I wouldn't even drive my truck down there. I'm a nervous, terrible driver when it comes to that. So anyway, electrical cabinets. These are complex electrical motor starters and controls for every single one of our systems, the generator, so that when the power goes out, the generator kicks in and the pumps can run, because we can't have overflows, even if we can't tell the state board, oh, the power's out, so we're okay, we can do it. No, they say, get a generator and get it fixed. So this is what it looks like coming back up that hill. You can't get standard cleaning equipment down there. You just can't get to it. It's too difficult. Also, that is one of those 10-foot public utility easements between properties, and we have dozens and dozens and dozens of requests to abandon those things. And we are dealing with them all the time. And how do we know whether we're going to need access in the future or not? And people are doing it just to save money, so they can combine their lot and not pay the assessment, which makes it more difficult on us too. So we've got complicated pumps. These are pretty standard stuff. We've got tanks that have to be inspected. They have to be cleaned. We have diving companies to come and take care of that. We've got corrosion control because we've got steel. We've also got pre-stressed concrete. In this picture, you've got so much going on. You've got everything from the building to chemical vats, to concrete pedestals, to control valves, and centrifugal pumps, and chemical feed piston pumps, and monitoring equipment. And this stuff doesn't maintain itself. This stuff is all stuff that takes experience and training and understanding and knowledge, and thank you very much, Greg. It's a lot of work. Air relief valves. So all of these mechanical pieces of equipment, we'll see some of this stuff today. We make our own chlorine. Very unusual through a process that we'll see. We've got SCADA, supervisory control and data acquisition. So this is just a screenshot showing whether pumps are running. You can look at this computer screen and see what's going on in the various locations. Again, these show pumps and show flows in gallons per minute and those types of things. But again, that's something that we need to know how to operate, and we need to know how to troubleshoot. Chemical feed pumps, we've got dozens of them, feeding different types of chemicals into the water and wastewater. Laboratory equipment, this is an online monitor. This is something that has to be serviced on a regular basis. You've got to go through specific training for it. You've got to keep it right because it monitors water quality on a real-time basis. The other end of that is this digital readout and sample lines up here. So everything is interconnected. Again, pumps and control valves all over the place. This is really unique. We're one of very few in the state that have this type of facility. We have two trailers with membrane filter systems in it. And these are extremely complicated, extremely expensive, and very, very good. Very good for what this community needs. So to wrap this up, GCSE's employees need to be competent. One of the vision statements the board made was to provide an environment that values, supports, and improves employee recruitment, development, retention, and cross-training of excellent employees. That's my everyday. This is what I think about when I come in. If this statement doesn't reflect the board's interests, we need to modify it, because when you give me a recipe, that's what I've got to go by. So, in doing that, One thing that's kind of interesting is with our employees, on Monday they got to be a plumber, Tuesday they're an electrician, Wednesday they're a pump tech, Thursday they're working on SCADA, Thursday afternoon they're operating the treatment plant, Friday they're a heavy equipment operator, and they got to really, they don't have to be a master of it, but they got to work in all of that, or work around all of that, and know the safety requirements operation, know how to get help if they can't figure it out. They've got to achieve the state certification, they've got to respond to emergencies and be on call, operate and understand multiple treatment plants. We've got the surface water plants, we've got standard plants for the Hetch Hetchy water. We've also have the wastewater plant, and a variety of conditions, weather conditions, it doesn't matter. Oops, it's raining, it's no work today. It doesn't work that way. It's all hours of the day and night. And then on Sunday, during the football party, you're called out because you got to plug. This, I said plug sewer, but I watched the videos. It was a water line. This guy is from a water utility in Texas. And he was actually fixing a water line. And this went viral. It was really pretty good.
It's crazy.
Kind of interesting. But you got to fix it.
They don't own pumps there?
Sometimes you just get there and you don't have the pump and you got to go across, you know, yeah. Because you don't know what you're dealing with and you know, you feel it and you can fix it. And
well, utilities always put the shutoff for the hydrant right where the water drops.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it always is right there. I mean, I've shut so many of those off.
So this is the last of the vision discussion, plan, fund, implement improvements to the treatment plant and systems that integrate technology and provide for industry standard efficient maintenance and operation. When I talked about maintaining hydrants, control valves, PRVs, got to happen. We got to have the time to do it. In order to get the time to do it, we got to stop doing manual labor. And right now we're doing a lot of manual labor, and you'll see some of it. That manual labor can be fixed with technology and equipment. Okay? I'm not saying throw people at it. I don't think we need to have a person standing by every manhole to make sure that we don't have an overflow. You know, we can fix it with improvements and equipment.
Money.
You want money. Yeah, money. You can't do it without money. I mean, you have to throw money at it. We definitely have to chase the grants while they're available. So as far as the infrastructure goes, much of it's 50 years old or more, and that's where you plan the life expectancy. When you put it on a depreciation schedule, this is where you plan for it to be dead. And we're lucky. A lot of it's hanging in there. Some of it is there, though, and our guys are taking good care of it. Improvements will reduce expenses, increase efficiency and safety, and image and service quality, too. You know, I mean, it's important when things are maintained well. Water distribution and collection system improvements, upgrade planning study is 90% complete. That's a big deal. That's $1 million between those two services in reality of planning money to get plans and specifications and permits to do that $10 million project, that's the next line there. And we're looking to get a grant funded. But the problem is, when we identify the need for it, if the grants aren't there, we're still going to have to decide how we get it funded in the future. So we know we need to make sure we continue to move that forward. So our tour today, obviously, go through the logistics where the closed-toe shoes, all of the sites we're going to are accessible. You can walk them. You don't have to hike. You don't have to climb over things or swim.
3-hour tour.
Carpool recommended if you have the ability to travel together, that would be great. We'll be returning here. Don't have anything planned at the end other than to adjourn, but we will be at the wastewater plant last. And each location, we're basically going to stop the meeting when we leave and then reconvene the meeting, and I'll be taking those times down. I will be your secretary today. Locations, just so you know, the timing, pretty much we'll head off right now. We'll go to the fire department, 15 to 20 minutes. I mean, if we're late, we're late. We've just got to know that we want to end it here, and we got some really good stuff to see here, too. So, conscious decision if we're late at any one of these places, 30, 45 minutes at Second Grody. 15 minutes through a lift station, it'll be all prepared and ready. It's the Sinky lift station you hear about. So we can go and take a look, and we can talk about what that is and, you know, what that means. But it's not going to take us long to get there, get out, to go get it, talk about it, get back in the vehicle, go to the alternate water supply, 30 minutes. That's a trailer that we'll walk through and look at and talk about. Greg's going to be your wonderful tour guide there. And then back to the wastewater plant. And take a look, start here and go down and around and come back and be done. So, I don't know if you want to take any quick public comment before we go on.
Is there any public comment? You want to get on with the tour?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So logistically, we've got a couple of district vehicles. We'll be able to fit board members and staff in. It looks like, I would say there's, I don't mean to prescribe who's riding the other, but
yeah.
I think we're looking at three or four other vehicles.
We're all going to ride together. Yes, a couple of district drives.
Cool. Cool.
All right, the meeting is in recess at 9:35.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Until we get to the next place.
Oh, that's likely that, man.
Cool.